Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Bootleg Football Podcast. The last, I guess you could technically say, preseason Bootleg Football Podcast, because we're talking about season predictions today, with the first Sunday of the regular season just hours away at this point. And we are going to be recapping as well the Tampa and Dallas season opener, the Thursday night game that just happened. We're recording this before that game, but we're going to kind of slip in a little game recap after that game, right at the top of this episode. So we're going to have a little bit of time traveling here, but we wanted to be able to recap the season opener and then kind of recap our division picks, talk about who we think are going to go to each conference championship, and hopefully talk about who we think are going to win the Super Bowl as well out of those conference championship picks too. So pretty loaded episode. But before we get into all that, EJ, my wonderful co-host, buddy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm good. I'm excited. You know, not only because the season's kicking off in, well, already kicked off by the time you're all watching this, but just about to kick off. And really quickly, I'm going to come down and join you in Las Vegas, and we're going to get to go to the Ravens Raiders game on Monday. So I'm psyched. I think everybody that does this for a living is pretty psyched right now. It's time. It's real. What am I drinking? I have a beer from not super local brewery, but a brewery down in Washougal, Washington, which is down in southern Washington, right by the Columbia River. Some people might be familiar with the motocross track that's there that holds a motocross outdoor national, but it is called 5440 Brewing, and this is their Red Zeppelin Amber Ale. I'm excited about it because they dry hop it with a healthy dose of Amarillo hops. So it's got a malty profile, but that Amarillo, when you dry hop it later in the process, is going to give it probably a pretty clean finish. It's 5.6 by volume, so it's pretty drinkable stuff. Love the can art. Like that it's a bit of a small town brewery that I haven't tried. They have several other beers, so that's always kind of like, it's like when you read a book from a new author and then you find out they've written like five other things and you're like, oh, I like that. I'm going to try the other stuff. So I'm excited to try a new beer. What do you have?
Well, so I had a little adventure tonight while I'm in Vegas. I went to Nobu. I'm staying at Caesar's Palace because I'm working with Caesar's all week to kick off the NFL season. And so I went to Nobu because I talked to the general manager in Nobu yesterday and I was like, hey, you guys have the largest whiskey bar west of the Mississippi, at least Japanese whiskey bar west of the Mississippi, second largest in the country. Can I come, you know, film that as B-roll for this project? And he's like, sure, come on by before we open.
Film your whiskey bar, says the whiskey lover.
I did not intend for this to happen.
Oh, of course not.
But one thing led to another. And I just start getting, they just start bringing me drinks. They made me a sidecar with like fresh yuzu juice, and they brought me a flight of sherry cask aged Japanese whiskey. There was an Akashi 5-year that was just unbelievable. And I picked myself up some Starbucks on the way back up to my room from that, because I was like, if I get another drink right now and try to do a podcast, this episode is going to go radically different than what I intended. So I had my fill of Japanese whiskey, and thank you again to Nobu for really just giving me, honestly, one of the best meals of my life. I had never had I'm not like much of a sushi guy. And so I never had sashimi before, believe it or not. And I feel like I can never have it again because I don't think it's ever going to be as good as Nobu sashimi. But yeah,
You start with Nobu, sashimi is probably going to be largely downhill unless you, I don't know, go to Tokyo. You can find good sashimi, but if you start there, your frame of reference is pretty skewed.
Yeah, it's... I'm not even kidding. Like one of the five best meals of my life, and I'm forever grateful that things spiraled a little bit out of control before I came up to record this episode. So I just got my coffee now to kind of get me back on the rails.
This is great.
Have you had it before?
No. Okay. First sip. Took a nice big full first sip after I let a little bit of air into it, and this is gorgeous.
When I come up to Seattle for week two, because you and I are going to Titans at Seahawks in, I guess, a week from now, by the time this comes out, we'll have to grab a sixer. Honestly, I'm going to be like stuffing a lot of beer in my suitcase coming back because there's a lot of stuff. I can't get dead guy ale like down in SoCal.
That's weird to me. So. Anyways, we'll get you set up.
So first things first, because I know a lot of people are coming just for this. We're going to take a little break and talk about Tampa hosting Dallas, do our little bit of a game recap there. Again, we are recording this in the past, but after the game tomorrow, because we're recording this on Wednesday night, we'll do a little 15-20 minute segment and talk all about that game, which I will roll right now. Well, EJ, that felt like a playoff game. And, you know, the team that won is the one that we expected to win, but I did not expect the game to be that kind of, you know, knockdown, drag out, blow for blow affair. There's no such thing as moral victories, but I'll be damned, that was pretty close. The Cowboys were absolutely not a pushover. They gave the champs all the smoke, everything they could handle, and barely lost that game. And a couple things, if they just went the Cowboys' way, honestly, if just a couple kicks went the Cowboys' way in the first half, they might have won that game. So all the credit in the world to Dallas. Hell of a game. Like I said, had playoff atmosphere.
It felt like a late season game. It did not feel like a game out of the gate, right?
Yeah.
Most, we talked a lot in this podcast and our last two podcasts about, hey, first week and a lot of variants and takes a while to gel and kind of not really. They both came out swinging. They traded punches. Nobody got out to a big lead. They kept each other in sight pretty much the whole time, and it became pretty clear that, yeah, it's going to come down to the last possession. And that's, I would not say that's typical for a season opener. So it felt like we were a couple months into the season with two well-oiled teams kind of running into each other and giving each other their best shot. And that's a fantastic opener.
My main takeaway is Dak Prescott, who we had not seen all offseason because at first he was recovering from the ankle, does like a couple days of training camp, strains his shoulder, and then, you know, didn't see him at all in the preseason. Saw him throw a little bit in like Hard Knocks and stuff like that, but we didn't actually get to see him play football until tonight. Threw the ball 58 times and his arm didn't fall off. To me, that's a good thing. The zip didn't seem quite the same, like compared to,
but it wasn't bad.
It wasn't that far off. That's what I'm saying.
No, and
it was like 80-85%, and that's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, especially with his placement, because there were throws. There was a throw that he hit Lamb on the sideline, and like Lamb was already pinned up against the sideline. He already had his toes right there. He knew that he didn't have any more room to go. He had his arms out to the side, and Dak hit him right in the cradle. Like,
yeah,
he barely had to tense to like catch that ball. It like it sat right where you hold a football, and it was, you know, probably an 18-yard, you know, out, you know,
which is
across the field.
That's like a hard NFL throw to make when you bad wing,
and it hit him in a spot about this big. So when you're throwing the ball that accurately, if it has a little bit less fastball on it, but he threw some pretty flat balls down the middle too. You know, again, was it prime Dak? No, it wasn't prime Dak, but you're right. It was easily good enough to win.
It was more than enough to keep them in the game with arguably the best team in the NFL. And we can talk about, you know, yeah, losing Sean Murphy Bunting early on definitely did not help the secondary at all, because they just started going after Jamel Dean over and over and over again. You know, we could talk about the turnovers from the Bucs that, you know, gave the Cowboys some pretty advantageous situations on offense as well. But just the main thing that I wanted to see tonight was, could Dak throw? And he could throw. And that, to me, just changed the entire outlook of not just the Cowboys, but the NFC East and the NFC as a whole. Because the Cowboys have enough firepower with even an 80% Dak that clearly they can play with anybody. Like, they are now officially, to me, a threat in the NFC. Because if they can go toe-to-toe with Tampa, they can go toe-to-toe with anybody.
Yeah, I think we sort of keep our hats on about how good they're going to be down the stretch, because, again, he looked good tonight. Is he going to last? Is he going to hold up? You know, week one has variance both up and down, and maybe this is their uptick variance. Maybe this is their healthy variant. But their situation in Dallas reminds me a lot of the situation in Green Bay, right? Which is, if you get your all-pro quarterback back, you're going to be just fine. In fact, you're going to be really good and pretty scary. And we've said that about the Dallas offense. Certainly, I think their offense might even be more loaded in terms of number of playmakers than Green Bay's. They don't have anybody as good as Devontae. And, you know, I think Aaron Jones is easily a great running back. But after that, the depth in Green Bay drops off a little bit. But it kind of doesn't matter, because you got Aaron Rodgers, and he's going to put the ball on anybody. He's going to make Robert Tonyan look amazing. So same thing with Dak. We said this in our preview episode, right? That it's kind of as Dak goes, so go the Cowboys, because after that, it's like Cooper Rush or Garrett Gilbert. And that is not the same thing, but all this talent is really keyed by Dak being able to stand back there and deliver those throws. He did that tonight. I'm with you. The Cowboys are a different team and a much more dangerous team when he did that, and they gave what is a very deep world champion team that brought everybody back everything they could handle down to the last minute.
What do you make of, I guess I can say, the dichotomy of Chris Godwin? Amazing play, crucial mistake. Like, it's been a theme recently, like even going back to late last season. I know he was playing with, I think it was a wrist or a finger, broken something in his hand, but it's the peaks are high and the valleys are low with Chris Godwin lately, and I don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah, we talked about this a little before the show, that Godwin isn't over whatever was plaguing him last year. The offseason and training camp and whatever didn't purge him of whatever demons he was dealing with. Because look, I love Chris Godwin. I think when he is together and playing his best ball, he's the best receiver on a team. And that's with Mike Evans, who's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame.
And Antonio Brown, who's one of the best of his generation.
You know, and Antonio Brown has purged his demons for the most part. He is playing not entirely like the Antonio Brown of old, but he is, I'd say he's fully realizing his late career potential. He is everything that he should be as a football player. Chris Godwin is not, and he wasn't down the stretch last year. He had some troubling drops in key situations. Again, he still came through, made plays, but he wasn't firing on all cylinders, and he's not over that. Like, he had some of that tonight. He had, again, like you said, a couple of good plays. He had some drops that were not good. He'd key fumble on a drive, headed down to score a touchdown, like right on the goal line. Cowboys recover, take it out to about the 10-yard line. He pushed off late in the game. Was it a push-off? OPI? I'm kind of glad they didn't call it. But
all the Cowboys fans sitting next to me in the sportsbook sure thought it was a push-off.
Well, Mina thought it was a push-off. Mina and I think Jeff Schwartz are going back and forth about, hey, defensive backs are off balance in that situation. And it's true, they are. But look, he pushed off and they didn't call it. And they're letting him play. So he makes a play there that's pretty crucial to getting the Bucs down into field goal range. So again, it's this, high variance, high highs, and oh man, what was that? And not just one in either category. And it almost alternated per throw. It wasn't like, oh, he started off rough and then he was good through the middle of the game and then he fell off at the end. It was literally throw to throw. You didn't know what you were going to get. Is he going to catch it? Is he going to drop it? They kind of look like concentration drops. But deep downfield, he got hit right in the hands. Brady put the ball literally right on him, right here. And he just didn't get it. And it was a late turn. I know he was headed, it was a sort of middle post. He's down. He saw it come over his shoulder. He had to turn right, put his hands up really quickly, but literally the ball hit him square in the hands and he just flat out didn't catch it.
One Buccaneer though, who had no dips this game. And in fact it was all peaks. There's no such thing as valleys for this guy. And that's Vita Vea, who, like, I know Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald and Chris Jones is Chris Jones, but if we're talking the defensive tackle position, who is the best nose in the league? I cannot argue anyone other than Vita Vea. He is a monster among monsters. It's like I'm watching a young Vince Wilfork. You remember Vince, like mid-2000s, like peak Vince, when he was just unbelievably dominant. You know, Albert Haynesworth, before he got paid, just completely changed football games. That's Vita Vea. And he showed it again tonight that when he is at his best, offenses have to completely change how they play against the Buccaneers. Like, Zeke ran like 11 times all night. And this was a close game. It was a one-score game for the majority of the time. They didn't even attempt to run the ball because they knew they couldn't because Vita Vea is on the field. He is such a game changer that you don't really see that reflect in the box score, but very, very few defensive linemen, very few defensive players, period, change offenses like Vita Vea does.
I think there are a bunch of guys in the league, handful, 8 to 10 guys in the league that change run games like he does, but that's not all he does.
Yeah.
Right. And the Bucs defensive line just in general played the run really well. Dallas got very little on the run at all. They just didn't get very much movement. They didn't get very much traction. There weren't a lot of holes. Everything got snuffed out pretty quickly, especially through the middle, and that's Vea, but it was also the ends and Sue and Tryon Shrinka, and like they collapsed on the interior run and just said, nah, you're gonna have to do something else. They made a little bit of real estate to the edges, but not enough to make running worthwhile. But what Vea does that's different than those other guys that are stalwarts in the middle, I'm thinking of guys like healthy Eddie Goldman, right? Eddie Goldman takes a 3-yard box in the middle of the field and says go elsewhere. Like Vea's doing that, and when he's got a healthy Akeem Hicks and whatever, like that's good. But what Vea does that those guys don't do is just raw explosive power. Like anytime the Cowboys left one guy on him on passing down, he just mauled them. It wasn't hand placement, it wasn't get off, it wasn't burst, it was just, I'm just gonna take you and like mush you back into Dak. And you see these guys just struggling to like even get a foot down. They're trying to get a hand on him and they're just going backwards like this. And it was consistent. Like that was not something he did once, right? When you look down and there was one guy trying to solo him up in pass protection, he was crushing the pocket.
Yeah.
Like routinely right at the middle. We've talked about it over and over that middle pressure is a thing that just gets to quarterbacks because it gets there so quickly. It's in their line of vision. They then have to move one side or the other. It sort of frees them up for shots by the edge rushers coming in. And when that guy's 347, he's a rare athlete at 347 because he's got all that power, but he can move too. And he's big enough, tall enough, long enough that those strides are getting to the quarterback quickly. And it's just disorienting to see a guy that's, you know, 325, who's paid to stop people, like on skates, falling into your lap like that. And Vea can do that. And there's not a lot of guys around the league that have that just like full on caterpillar bulldozer power to just blow guys away one-on-one consistently and put them in the quarterback's lap, and Vea can do that.
I think it was Daniel Jeremiah when he was coming out of school who said, I got through three quarters, and I just wrote down, he's Haloti. Because yeah. DJ scouted Haloti Ngata when he was coming out, and he's like, same dude. Same exact dude. And I don't disagree after seeing what he's done in the NFL. He's just a phenomenal football player. One of the very best defensive players in the entire league. And on the Bucs defense in general, yeah, the DBs struggled a little bit here and there. Carlton Davis had a couple nice plays. I think he got flagged a couple times. One of them was a little bit ticky-tack for me. But the Bucs front seven came to play, and I do feel like on a couple crucial drives, they were the difference. But yeah, overall, just a fantastic game. Tom Brady is still Tom Brady. The offensive line for the Bucs is still the offensive line. The weapons are still the weapons. Still a great team that did not play their best game and still won, which to me is encouraging if I was a Bucs fan of like, hey, we turned the ball over a bunch. We stalled a bunch of times, and we still beat a team that could very easily win their division. And same thing for the Cowboys. It's like, man, they didn't play their best game. They missed a couple kicks. You know, they had a couple really awful missed opportunities on offense. Not necessarily Dak's fault, just things that happen in a football game. And they very easily could have won too. So that's why I feel like this just felt like a playoff game between two, I don't want to say equally matched, but similarly talented teams. And I don't know, it kind of feels like we might get to see that one again. I have a feeling we might.
It's possible. Depends on how Dak hangs in there for sure. Like most teams, there's some injuries that could change that really quickly. But I think the most the thing that was kind of most energizing for me about Dallas was balance, right? It was great that Dak came out and threw the ball. That was kind of necessary. Without that, we're talking about a very different team. He did do that. But that was just the offense, and that's really what people have been focusing on because it's the stronger unit of the two on that team, and last year the defense was really bad, right? It didn't play nearly as well or nearly up to the level of the talent that they've invested on that side of the ball. And tonight, defense made plays at all three levels,
yeah.
Right? They got pass rush. Their linebackers made a bunch of plays. Leighton Vander Esch made a play. Their secondary made some really key plays. They were super tight. We talk about a game of inches. You know, even on the touchdown of the corner that Brady threw, or not Brady, that Dak threw to the corner, Ross Cockrell was like, his coverage wasn't bad. His hand missed that ball by 4 inches?
Five? I think that was the one to Amari.
Right in the corner, right? Yeah, little loop route to the corner. And Cockrell was, he wasn't even a half step behind. Like, literally, he had his arm in his gut, and he missed the ball by this much. And there were a lot of plays like that. Diggs made a play for the Cowboys where, again, if he didn't touch him, the Bucs receiver's going the other way. There's nobody behind him, but he got his fingertips on the ball, right? Stuttered it. Evans couldn't reach out and get it. Like, Dallas made plays on defense, and that felt very different. Like, it wasn't the offense scoring points and then going, just hold them, guys. Just don't let them score too fast. Like, the defense was threatening. And, again, not at the same level as the Bucs. I'm with you that these are not two equals, but Dallas played solidly and, again, didn't make the most of every opportunity, just like the Bucs. They missed opportunities on both sides of the ball, but they still played a solid game and took Brady and the Bucs literally to the last minute. And that, to me, was surprising. That balance out of defense, out of Dallas's defense, was not something I was expecting. And that's just a really good indicator for them moving forward that they're not, because teams that play out of balance don't go deep into the playoffs, right? You can't have a major weakness you're dragging along. And if both sides of the ball play reasonably equally well, that team's it's going to do some things. They're absolutely going to threaten in their division for sure.
All they were missing last year was an average defense. That would have been the difference between starting out, you know, 5-0 and I think it was like 1-4 is what they ended up with in the first five games. But hell of a game. Massively enjoyable, at least for me as a neutral fan. Loved watching every second of it. And I think it's a good table setter for a very good week one slate of NFL games. So that being said, let's get back to our regularly scheduled programming. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that little chat about the Bucks and or Cowboys winning that game. I'm assuming it's Bucks, but hey, it's the NFL. You never know. I'm not going to rest on
week one. It's week one.
You'd never really like I'm putting in a whole bunch of parlays for week one, and I just know I'm going to lose all my money because you can never predict. Like, remember when Jacksonville beat Indy week one last year?
I say this every year, and I feel like I just, this is one of those convictions that gets stronger with me the more the older I get, is week one is always a shit show. Always, right? They're just random results. Like, say the Cowboys blow the Bucks out of the water. I don't think it's going to happen, or I don't think it happened, but something like that occurs, right? And people go off. People overreact to week one, both positively and negatively, every year. And it's like everybody's working the kinks out. We have a shorter preseason. I know we have more joint practices, but it's different. It's different when it's live. When the lights go on and it counts, things are different. And weird stuff happens week one everywhere. Like, I would say two-thirds of the result are like week one influenced that are just like wouldn't happen any other time and typically doesn't. It does roll over into week two. It lessens. Maybe one third of the results are still like, and people start to freak out and lose their minds. Oh my God, they're 0-2. Like, they'll never win anything. And by the time you get a month in, which is 4 weeks, right? And then you get to week six, like, you pretty much start to see who folks are. And some folks, you were surprised. You thought they were going to be good. We thought they were going to be good preseason. And turns out this mix of team, coaches, scheme, players is a dog. It's not working out, and they're going to have an uphill battle all season. Most things normalize 3 weeks, 4 weeks in. You start to see teams perform as they will for the rest of the season. But week one, there are always sort of a majority of what I'll call weird results. And people, look, there's a lot of pent-up energy. We talked about it. People lose their minds every week. I thought they were going to the Super Bowl, and they got beat by 15 points. And you're like, it's week one. Just let it go. It's a long season. We got 17 games this year. Like, let it go. It's okay.
Overreaction Monday in week one is always by far,
oh yeah,
like the most ridiculous sports media day of the year.
It is one of them for sure. And it happens every year. And you're like, don't you remember? Just like you said, last year when this happened, or 2 years ago when this happened. I mean, there's examples going back forever. This is not a new phenomena. So people just forget that week one is like, I think you're either very brave or very crazy for making parlays on week one, because good luck.
Yeah, but it's also when I get like the best odds in terms of payout.
The odds makers haven't figured it all out either.
Nobody knows anything. Like, nothing makes sense. Up is down, left is right.
You can slip some by, so I appreciate that. But, whew, yeah, good luck with that.
So, first things first, we're going to recap. If you watched, or rather paid attention to our division by division recap series all summer long, where we were doing these like 2 to 3.5 hour, you know, breakdowns of every single division, you know, picking who we thought was going to come out on top in every single division. So I'll kind of briefly recap who we picked over summer to win each division in the AFC and then the NFC. If we have any changes since those picks with new information, which we have a couple, you know, we'll talk about those. But for the most part, if you really want to get like our nitty gritty predictions division by division, we have, I'm not even kidding, Lord of the Rings size episodes on every single division for you to go listen to and check out. So we'll start with AFC first here. In the West, we both picked the Chiefs to win. I don't think that's changing for either one of us, probably for the next, 9 or 10 years. In the South, I originally picked Jacksonville because every other team had some pretty major questions that has since given way to, I think, maybe some even bigger questions about Jacksonville that I've got. So I've changed my pick to Tennessee. You had already picked Tennessee. So I think we're kind of in lockstep there that we both like the Titans to win the South. The North, we both picked the Browns to win that division. And then in the East, was kind of our first real disagreement that's held up. I picked the Dolphins, and I am standing by that pick, and you picked the Bills, which is certainly justifiable considering how ridiculous Josh Allen is and the coaching staff, the front office, overall depth of talent. Bills are a great team. And then for me, I picked the Dolphins just because I happen to be a believer in Tua's development. I love the weapons they've drafted. I love the investment they've made on the line of scrimmage. I think their secondary is crazy. Just exceptionally talented team. And I, of course, love Coach Flo as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Dolphins and the Bills both finish, you know, within like one win of each other. And you could probably flip a coin on who wins the division. But either way, I think the East is going to be very tight. So overall, your thoughts on the AFC and you sticking with all of your picks this summer?
Yeah, I feel like most of them hold up. If I have any wavering, might be on the Tennessee pick just because, again, they did change offensive coordinators. Arthur Smith moves on to Atlanta. They seem to have – their defense is going to be better. So that's what I feel really good about with Tennessee is last year the defense was, I don't want to say historically bad, but uncharacteristically bad, certainly for a Mike Vrabel coach team. I think they're going to rebound to the norm. I like a bunch of their defensive additions, and I feel like their defense is going to be better. And look, on offense, they weren't bad. Yes, they have a new coordinator. They didn't lose their quarterback. They didn't lose their running back. They added a huge weapon at wide receiver. Like, this is still a really good team that was pretty much contending for the division. So maybe the Colts, but boy, the Colts have to figure out the quarterback position. And if they don't, I don't think they topple the Titans.
That was the one thing kind of holding me back from picking.
I love Frank Reich as a coach, and Chris Ballard as a GM has stacked that roster. It's very much like the Tennessee roster. It's very talented. They have a lot of players there, but look, it's a passing league, modern NFL. Gotta have a quarterback, right? You gotta have a quarterback that's gonna play at a pretty high level if you're gonna be the division leader, the division winner in what is a competitive division. Maybe the Colts, but I really don't think so. I think it's Titans. They have the stability. Yeah, a little bit of a change in offensive coordinator, but they've added talent. Their defense is going to rebound. It feels like they're going to be tough to knock off the top of that division. So I'm good with that. Browns, we both picked, and we feel really good about Kevin Stefanski in year two. Again, going to be more shorthand with that offense. They really cranked it up at the end of the year. I feel like they're going to pick up where they left off. Talent-wise, Andrew Berry is pretty much the model for the NFL right now and what he's done in talent acquisition. And as far as the East, again, Brian Daboll coming back, the entire coaching staff being pretty stable and adding a few more weapons, Josh Allen having another year. Again, is he going to regress a little bit from his best ever career year? Probably. That's still probably going to be good enough to win the East. So I feel pretty good about the AFC. I think it might be a little bit easier to pick than the NFC. Maybe we'll see at the end of the year how much egg I have on my face or how much egg we have on our faces. But feel pretty solid about the AFC.
Knowing my luck, this means Jacksonville actually is going to win it after all, just because I switched my picks to Tennessee, which, by the way, the reason I picked Jacksonville is because you look at their skill position talent and it's absolutely loaded. Unfortunately, they've lost Travis Etienne since I made that pick, but it seems like he was going to be more of a change of pace back for them anyway, and that James Robinson was still the guy, so it's not that big of a hit, all things considered, but it is a hit. I think they have some young pieces on defense that I like. I'm really high on Jacksonville's future, but I just, throughout the preseason, I didn't see enough things from the offensive line where I was like, yeah, I feel good about this. It kind of felt like all of their quarterbacks, like not just Trevor Lawrence, but like even like their depth guys were just getting massacred. And I'm like, if your starting five is just okay, and if they get hurt, the guys behind them are even worse. I don't know. I felt like their offensive line was so thin that I just couldn't quite pull the trigger yet on Jacksonville. Give them like a couple more drafts and I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, with Jacksonville, it's more just about rookie quarterback, which, look, I think Trevor's going to be fine, but rookie quarterback, rookie head coach. You take either one of those things, right? Veteran quarterback and a rookie head coach takes a while to gel. You know, rookie quarterback and veteran head coach, like, you just mix those. Nope, you got rookie and rookie, and they're both going to be learning, and they're going to probably make mistakes at different times about game management on the coaching side. Trevor's going to be taking his lumps as a rookie starting quarterback, even if he is amazing. And we talk about this. I talk about this all the time. Justin Herbert was amazing last year, and the Chargers won how many games?
Seven.
Right. And summer. He was amazing. He was better than pretty much any rookie quarterback, pretty much ever, in terms of statistics, and had a very talented team, right? He did not come into a team that was bereft of talent. And Jacksonville is not, you know, limited at the skill positions either. They have so much potential, but it's like all those moving pieces coming together and gelling with a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. I just can't say they're going to jump out of the gate and win the division. Are they going to be dangerous for years to come? Again, I think like you, with a couple more drafts, a few more offensive line pieces, or a couple more offensive line pieces. Yeah. Yeah. That's not going to be a team I want to play, you know, next year. But this year, it's hard for me to say, oh yeah, they're going to whoop, because all these divisions, AFC, NFC, doesn't matter. All these divisions, there's an argument, you know, that at least two, sometimes three of the teams could legitimately win it without a miracle moonshot, right? That's a flex of like greater than 50% based on a couple of bounces, a couple of games, a couple of performances, a couple of injuries, right? The NFL wants what used to be 8-8, and I guess they probably now want 9-8, 17 games. They want parity. They want everybody to be, and the margins between a lot of these teams are really thin, especially when you're talking about who's going to finish second, who's going to finish third. You're like, you can't tell me, you know, right now, right? Some of these divisions have clear winners where we're like, nope. We're going to talk about one in the NFC where we were like, well, if Aaron Rodgers comes back, we both know who we're picking, right? That's not changing. But, you know, tell me, are you sure that Minnesota and Chicago are going to finish in the order you think they are? Maybe they're going to flip. Like, they can. And it's like that in every division as you go down, right? There's a reason that the team you're picking second or third could be the division winner. So,
and that, speaking of those NFC divisions you mentioned where everything is just a complete shit show in terms of trying to pick it, you and I were actually in agreement on three of the four, and they were the ones that we recapped over summer, which is the South, both of us picking Tampa for obvious reasons, both of us picking Green Bay in the North for obvious reasons. Like at the time we had the caveat, this was like before the Aaron Rodgers thing worked out, of like, if Aaron comes back, they win. Aaron came back, they're going to win. And then in the East, we both pick Washington because we love their defense on all three levels. It's not just a defensive line team. Like, they have linebackers, they have DBs. We love their weapons, although knock on wood, Curtis Samuel seems to have gotten hurt again today, but it's all right. They still have other guys. And you know, Fitzmagic / Fitztragic is, he's good enough that I think they're going to win the East. So we were in agreement on those. The one that we disagreed on happened to be the one division that we didn't actually pick during the division review episodes, which was the NFC West. So for the first time, we'll both reveal our picks for that, which is mine being the San Francisco 49ers and yours being the LA Rams. In terms of, you know, how big of a difference between these two teams there are, I think you and I can both agree it might be like two field goals over the course of a 17-week season that separates who wins the NFC West and who comes in third or even fourth, because it's not like Arizona and the Seahawks are bad teams either. Like, this is the one division where you could tell me that all four of them win it by like one game, and I would believe you. It is virtually impossible to feel confident with your pick in the NFC West. But that being said, I do feel somewhat good about the Niners winning it, because I believe in their defensive talent. I believe in their coach. I believe in their offensive line. They've got ridiculous amounts of skill position talent. And at least based on the limited sample size that we've seen so far, I think this whole two quarterback system with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance is actually going to work. So again, I know it's a very competitive division. The Rams are great. Seahawks are great. Cardinals are dangerous as all hell. But I'm a big believer in Kyle Shanahan. I'm a big believer in what I think they're going to do with these quarterbacks, and I'm a big believer in all of their skill position talent.
It's a brutal division. Like, you could tell me the Seahawks win this division right now, and I'd be, like, a little surprised, but I mean, like...
But not really.
Wafer-thin surprised, right? Not really at all surprised. You could tell me the Rams win, and I could say, that's... Absolutely, and I can tell you why. You could tell me the Niners win, and I could be like, Shanahan worked his magic. It worked out. And again, loaded with talent. Not surprised by any of those results. You tell me Arizona wins the division. Okay, I'm a wee bit more surprised than maybe I would be by any of the other teams. But I would not be shocked, right? Again, because I can draw you a path that Arizona wins. Because this division... is going to kick the crap out of each other on a weekly basis. And if you think about it, if you really are like so sure, if you're an NFC West fan, that's so sure that your team's going to win the division, think about just the division games, right? You're going to beat Shanahan twice if you're not a Niners fan, right?
Nope.
You might, but it's much more likely you're going to split. Are you going to beat him once? Yeah, you might get him. Right? Again, that's the way this entire division is. And it goes for every team. It's the same if you're a Rams fan. You're like, oh, you're gonna polish off the Seahawks twice.
Yeah, maybe not.
You could. It's happened before, right? But I don't know, pretty solid team. They last I checked, Russell Wilson was still the quarterback. So could he pip you with the line? Again, by a field goal, by, you know, defensive score, you know, Quandre Diggs picks one off and runs it back. Like, that's going to be the difference in so many of these games. And it goes like that for all the division games. This division's just going to kick the hell out of each other. It kind of reminds me of the old NFC East, right? When all the teams in the NFC East were good. That was a long time ago. But
like early mid-90s.
And they would just pound each other, right? And it was like a slugfest to see who would survive. And there's a little bit of that in the AFC North too, right? Pittsburgh's not giving anything up. Browns are good. Bengals, maybe not so much, but the Ravens are right there. They're, every game in that division is a war. And, you know, whoever makes it to the end is, you know, deserving and certainly battle tested, but predicting that at the beginning of the year and saying, oh no, this team is going to clean house and has a clear path to a division title, I don't think you could say that in the NFC West, not with confidence.
What's interesting, and we'll move to the NFC championship picks, because I think this is a great segue. You actually have, even though the Rams win the division, you actually have Niners versus Bucks in the NFC Championship, and I have Packers versus Bucks. We both think the Bucks are going to go, but we have a difference in opinion of who's actually going to face them. Is the reason why you have Niners versus Bucks is because you think towards the end of the season there's going to be more clarity on the quarterback situation and that that's going to push them over the edge?
I don't even think it's the quarterback situation, but you're absolutely dead on in terms of by the end of the season – I feel really strongly that the Niners are going to be hitting their stride. They're going to have figured it out. And I don't just mean at the quarterback position or even just on offense. They're going to be figuring out the defense as well. And I feel like going into the back half of the season, San Francisco is absolutely a team you don't want to play. They're going to be a really tough out in the second half of the season. They are going to have some more clarity about both sides of the ball. Hopefully they're going to have some more clarity about the quarterback position. Maybe it's that they're going to continue to play two quarterbacks and they've got that down to a well-oiled system. That's a hard thing to prepare for. You and I were talking about that in terms of who starts on a given team and the fact that if you have to prepare for two very different skill sets or approaches, that's a lot of extra time in a week. Whereas if you go in and there's an entrenched starter and you've played that guy, you know, like San Francisco going to play Russell Wilson, right? They've played him a bunch. They know he's going to be the starter. They know what he's good at. They know what they need to do. They can't always stop him because he's a very talented football player. But there's no like, oh, we got to prep for this other guy that has a very different approach. That's going to be the thing if Kyle Shanahan is able to keep some balance in the quarterbacking system. But regardless of whether or not he does, Kyle Shanahan, I have a lot of faith in him as a football coach. I think he's one of the smartest coaches in the league, and he's going to have that system dialed, and I don't think they're going to get gutted by injuries because they got absolutely gutted by injuries last year. I don't think that's going to repeat itself. Could they have some big injuries? Sure. Are they going to have as many as they did last year? I really doubt it. Like, statistically, that would be very odd.
It'd be really hard unless
you're the Chargers, right? Yeah. The Chargers seem to be able to do that on an annual basis, but they're going to regress to the mean a little bit in terms of injuries. They're going to have less, and that means they're going to have more weapons, and Shanahan's going to dial it in. He's a very good, adaptable coach, and it's going to be tough. They might start off a little bit slow, but they're going to finish fast.
The one difference that I had in my NFC Championship game picks, again, was having the Packers there instead of the Niners. And yes, you could argue for either one of them. I'm in total agreement. I think by like December, January, that's when we're going to see the real quote unquote Niners. I think Trey Lance is going to be starting by then. There's going to be a little bit more clarity at quarterback, maybe make them a little bit less predictable, if that's not even the right word. A little bit more overall dynamic on offense, I think, when he's starting over Jimmy. You know, the two quarterback thing will work for now, but I do think eventually it's going to be Trey Lance 100% of the time. I'm in love with their defensive personnel. Absolutely in love with it. I'm in love with their defensive line. I'm in love with their offensive line depth. Like, by December and by January, as good as the Niners were when they went to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, I think they can be even more dynamic than that, and that's saying a lot. But that being said, when you look at the Packers and you've got Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, you know, you got Randall Cobb back, who's, you know, Aaron's trusty slot receiver, picked up Amari Rodgers, who I think could be a dangerous returner, jet sweep guy, and also another slot option for them. By then, you'll have David Bakhtiari back. You got Elgton Jenkins, who's, I think it's fair to say, he's one of the top 10 overall offensive linemen in the entire league.
Mr. Everything.
He plays tackle, guard, center, all at a Pro Bowl level. He's going to make unbelievable amount of money. Like, that offensive line, I think, is really, really damn good when they're all healthy. And the defense under Joe Barry, again, the one matchup problem that Green Bay had against the Niners with Mike Pettine was they would get caught in blitzes in the run game. They would get caught in stunts in the run game. Kyle Shanahan just had Mike Pettine's number and would always punish the pressures that he would call, because they would call these, you know, like they're playing the run on the way to the quarterbacks, kind of how they would do it, except instead of doing the old Tampa 2 way where you're rushing four and everybody's penetrating, it's more so we're just sending five or six guys to the line of scrimmage. And, you know, Kyle would catch him in that and create a seam, and next thing you know, Mostert's going for like 75 yards. Joe Barry's defense, I think, is a little bit, you know, less aggressive in terms of bringing guys, but also more disciplined. You know, he's a linebacker by trade, cut his teeth as a linebacker's coach under Monty Kiffin, ironically enough. And, you know, all the reports that we've been seeing out of Packers camp and Packers offseason is everything just looks more buttoned up, more disciplined. There's less mistakes. There's less guys kind of getting caught out of position. And that's the big thing for them, is they just need to stop giving up big plays on defense and just hold people to getting a whole bunch of yards without a lot of points so that Aaron can do the rest. That was like the one weakness they had. And so I feel like Joe Barry's going to come in, and even if their defense isn't amazing, it'll be good enough that Aaron Rodgers, arguably the greatest quarterback of his generation, arguably, that's the key word there, that he can do the rest and, you know, carry them to the NFC Championship game. So again, that's like the one difference that I have. You could justify either one of these teams. But that being said, you and I are in agreement that they're both playing the Bucks and they're both losing to the Bucks, because how can you pick anybody but the Bucks to win the NFC?
The Bucks are really difficult. We talked about this in our previous pod in terms of offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, and MVP. And we both had Brady as sort of a shoe-in for the three picks of MVP, not necessarily as a shoe-in for the award, but absolutely has to be in the conversation. hyper-competitive, does not look like he's falling off physically, which makes no sense whatsoever. But again, I'm done betting against that or waiting for it to happen. It'll happen when it happens and not before. They brought everybody back, the coaching staff included. And there's enough depth there that they could have some serious injuries. Now, one to Brady. Don't want it to happen, not willing it to happen. Like, that's probably the one they can't survive. I'm not sure. Although all the glowing reports about how good Blaine Gabbert is, that's a huge drop off, right?
Yeah.
But it's still a loaded skill position roster, right? You got Godwin, Antonio Brown, Evans, and Gronk, plus three other tight ends behind Gronk that could probably start on most teams. You can survive. Like, that is, you know, there's so much. You can be a distributor in that system and still be wildly successful. And their defense is crazy. Like, it's not like you were just talking about the Packers defense. Look, if it's even decent, their defense is going to be better than decent. Their defense is going to force you to do some things you really don't want to do and make some mistakes. And then you hand the ball back to that offense. It's just both parts playing with each other and off of each other. And it's impossible for me to bet against that right now.
The only team that I put on the tier of Tampa Bay is Kansas City. In terms of coach, quarterback, overall talent surrounding coach and quarterback, like it's very much like a Bama and Georgia, where it's like college football. You got Bama, you got Georgia, you got everybody else, and that's Tampa and Kansas City to me. I'm not saying it's a two team league because the NFL is vastly different than college football. But boy, I find it difficult to pick anybody else. And that's probably as good a transition as any to talk about our AFC Championship picks, because both you and I have the Chiefs going to the AFC Championship for obvious reasons. But again, we differ on who's going to be facing them. I'm picking the Browns. You're picking the Bills. I'll give you the floor. Tell me why you think the Bills are going to the AFC Championship game again.
Comes down to Josh Allen for me. There's dynamism there, and he can do it both ways, right? Baker Mayfield is good. He's not as good as Josh Allen, and it comes down to, again, a razor-thin margin. We are not talking about, oh, the Bills absolutely blow the Browns away, blah, blah, blah. No, they don't, right? But if you need one play and you need, you know, the quarterback to go through three reads and then go, you know, I bet I can get 12 yards when I need 11 for the first down, I would go with Josh Allen, you know, 8 times out of 10 over Baker Mayfield. Again, not every time, but, you know, same thing. Weather's bad. You're playing outside. You need somebody to chuck the ball 45 yards on a line off 1 foot. I'm going to go, like, Baker's got a great arm. Again, we're not putting anybody down here or saying that, you know, they're not great. We're talking about people that have ascended to the championship game of the biggest league, you know, football league on the planet. It's a razor thin margin, but what Josh Allen can do and what Brian Daboll can do, again, Kevin Stefanski showed us a ton last year, and we believe, like we are saying to Browns fans, we believe it was not a mirage. We think the Browns have sustained success for the first time in a while because they have that match of GM, coach, and roster that are clicking. This comes down to thin margins, and it feels to me, and I'm going to talk about this when we get to the Super Bowl picks, that Buffalo has been grinding, right? Since they changed regimes, Brandon Bean got there and they had McDermott got there and they sat down. It feels like they sat down at a table and said, we're going to do this in year one. We're going to do this in year two. We're going to do this in year three. We're going to do this in year four. And by year five, we're going to win the Super Bowl. And they both looked at each other and kind of shook hands and went, yep. And they have been like methodical in their growth, right? They had a lot of work to do when they took over. It was not a continually a team that was competing for the championship every year. They just couldn't get over the Patriots hump, right? They have continually, and they expected, right? We will assemble the right coaches. We will pick that quarterback. We will develop that quarterback. We will do the same with some defensive talents, and we will be peaking together right here at this point on the chart. And that was kind of the end of last year. And that was really, I think, the opening of their true window. And I don't think their window is going to shut. I just don't a major like slide regression from Buffalo. I see this kind of continual. We made it a little bit better. We're grinding forward. We're building off what we built before. And they, you know, we know a little bit more. We learned our lessons about not winning that game against the Chiefs. We're going to bring a little bit more. We're going to bring just enough to maybe tip the scales. It just feels like that in Buffalo. Like it is a very steady, sustained climb that is linear. We talk about progression not being linear for players. For Buffalo, it feels very linear, right? It's not up and down. It is slowly increasing. And I feel like last year was the opening of that window, and now they're just sort of playing with the dials and going, nope, we learned something, and we're going to bring this, and we added this, and we've got just enough to get ourselves over the hump.
There's only a few teams really in the league that I think, because I would say most teams when they're in a championship window, the championship window is like 1 or 2 years.
For sure.
There's a few teams in the league where their championship window, I think, is legitimately 3, 4, 5 years. In some cases, it's going to be as long as their quarterback plays, like Kansas City.
Kansas City.
And you could argue that Buffalo is the same. Where
they're getting there.
As long as it's Bean, McDermott, Allen as the triumvirate at the top, you're fine. Like their window is those guys. The Browns are a little bit different because I think shit's going to get real expensive real quick for them.
Yeah, they're going to have to pivot to their division mate strategy, the Ravens, yes, and start going for comp picks because there is too much talent on that roster to keep. Like you just can't pay for it all. There's not enough hometown discounts to fit everybody under the cap,
at least not in a couple years when everything really starts, because they paid a couple guys so far, but it's give it a couple years and it's like that's the problem. That's the good problem to have, is they have so many good guys that it's literally impossible. Like I look at all the contracts that are coming up in the next 2 to 3 years, it's not possible,
honestly. They're third stringers. Like in the secondary, their third stringers are worth 1.5 tier money.
Right? Yeah.
And you just can't, like, that's not sustainable. You're just going to have to wave goodbye when some of them leave. And it'll be tough, but look, Barry's shown that he can replace them. But when you have guys that are on second and third string that could legitimately start for a third of the teams in the league, you can't keep them all.
at least a couple positions, like, because I don't think it's the case anymore, but going into camp, you know, their wide receiver 5 was Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's great. You know, your tight end 3 is David Njoku, but he wouldn't start on a lot of on most teams, but he'd at least play a lot.
He'd start at the move on a lot of teams. Like, he's better than a lot of teams move tight ends. Like,
but even then, it's like Harrison Bryant would start on a bunch of teams, in my opinion, even as a second year player.
Yeah, look, their safety depth, their corner depth.
Yeah,
it's legitimately, it's gonna be so expensive.
But that's why I have them go into the AFC Championship, is because of how ungodly talented they are. That I don't want to say they're injury proof. No team is straight up injury proof. But people get hurt in the NFL. It is a next man up league. And they're one of the few teams that I think they're next man up for a majority of their position groups. There's not a whole lot of drop off. Like, yeah, it'll hurt. If you have a backup tackle, like if Jed Wills go down, you have a backup tackle. It'll hurt, but you're not dead in the water. You know, they lost Wyatt Teller for a few games last year, and they were okay. You know, Nick Chubb went down. Good thing you got Kareem Hunt and D'Ernest Johnson. You know, Odell went down. Got DPJ. Still got Jarvis. Got Higgins. You know, if Hooper goes down. Bryant and Njoku, like they're so deep that they can outlast teams in the attrition game. And people don't like to acknowledge this, but attrition is such a major factor in the NFL that it's all about health. It's about who your backups are just as much as who your starters are. And I think the Browns are just so damn deep at virtually every position that if the worst happens, they'll be okay and they'll make it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's not a team, again, that I want to bet against, and I don't want to bet against them kind of right out of the gate. You might say, well, why didn't you pick them to go to the Super Bowl? Well, look, there's 16 other teams in that conference that, you know, and there's some really good ones. And again, you get to the top and the differences are so fine. It's going to be about injuries. It's going to be about calls, as much as people don't want to talk about that, right? There are going to be some bad calls that cost teams games. There always are. There are going to be bad bounces, right? There are going to be missed field goals at inopportune times, gusts of wind, whatever. The margin is razor thin at the top, and it's not that because I didn't pick them to go to the Super Bowl, I think the Browns are bad. I picked them outright to win the division, like without much hesitation. They're an excellent football team. And after that, you get in the play, like you need, my other podcast co-host always says, you need a chip and a chair, right? You got to win your division. You got to get into the playoffs. You need a chip and a chair. Like, get me in there and then see what happens. If you're peaking at the end of the season, you can make a roll.
Now, before we get into our Super Bowl picks, which might be, in some cases, slightly different than maybe people think, I do want to remind everybody that Underdog Fantasy has been an amazing sponsor for us all summer and all preseason long. They've really helped this channel grow. They've invested in us heavily because they like investing in you guys, our audience. They believe in you guys as well. It's been a great partnership for us. And again, before week one kicks off, one more reminder. Again, if you want to use promo code Brett at underdogfantasy.com, that will get you $25 free to use on the platform for any contest you want. It can be the Best Ball Mania tournament, which has $3.5 million in prizes. That is a $25 entry, so you basically get a free entry. It's $1 million to first prize. You want to use it in any other leagues. You want to use it in a private draft with your friends, you know, pick'ems, whatever you want to do. You can use that $25 for free just using promo code Brett at that link down in the description below. Underdog Fantasy is a fantastic fantasy platform, obviously. But they've also just been a fantastic supporter of Bootleg and our growth and everything that we're trying to do here. So thank you again to Underdog for sponsoring us all summer long. It's been an amazing experience. And I really can't wait to keep working with them because Nick and Liz and all them, fantastic company. And I thoroughly enjoy having them as our partner. But with that being said, let's get into these Super Bowl picks. A little bit chalky. On one half, you and I both have the juggernaut that is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going to the Super Bowl representing the NFC. But we have different picks in terms of who's representing the AFC. I have the Chiefs. You have the Bills. Who is your pick out of Bills versus Bucks to win? And do you believe that the Bills are strong enough to unseat Tampa Bay?
It's a good question. At the very beginning of the season, I think both teams will look different at the end of the season for all the reasons we've talked about going through this episode. There will be some attrition. There will be trends. There will be everybody's put your tape out. That's the thing about the Super Bowl is there's not a ton of surprises. You might have a play or two that's a wrinkle, but everybody knows what your defensive tendencies are. Everybody knows what your preferences are on third and long. It's more about execution, and it's a pressure cooker, right? Every eye in the world, billions of viewers are paying attention, and everybody in the NFL is done at that point, except for these two teams. Everybody's watching. Everybody's critiquing everything you do. It's a very pressure-filled situation, and it's about players making plays. And sometimes, like last year, you just don't have the horses, right? Kansas City got there. Their offensive line was beat up. Mahomes' toe was miraculously healed, if you believe that. He was still not 100%.
Yeah,
and you just
Toradol is a hell of a drug, huh?
You just sort of ran short at the finish, right? It's not that, you know, again, the idea of idealized, perfectly healthy, we had all our players, we could have beat them. Yeah, but you didn't. And that is the NFL, right? A couple of bounces, bad weather, a couple of injuries. It all stacks up at the end of the year, and then you get to this huge, bright light, pressure-filled situation. And the Bucs aren't going to blink at that, right? They won it last year. They understand. They believe. They know the guy they have under center knows how to win that game. Not just get them there, but win that game. And that's a thing, right? Because most players, how do you say most players? Most players don't get to a Super Bowl, right? Ever in their career, on average, right? Some players get to one. Some players get to two if they're really lucky. Very few players win a Super Bowl. Tom Brady is running out of fingers for rings. It's he knows how to get there. He knows how to win it. They believe he chose them and they won it last year. Like, I think people think because that happened that like it was always gonna happen. It doesn't work that way. Look back at the first 4 or 5 weeks of the Tampa Bay season. People were overreacting, right? Oh, it's not gonna work. He's not getting it. He's not meshing with Arians offense, blah blah blah. Well, sure enough, they leveled out, they hit their stride, and he said, I'm gonna take you to the Super Bowl. And we're going to win it. And they did. That's hard to overcome, right? I don't care whether it's the Chiefs or the Bills or whoever's on the other side. Like, you got Tom Brady on the other side. The best quarterback of all time. Probably the best football player of all time. Saying, yeah, you're going to take this game from me? Really? With all this talent around me? Really, you're going to take this game from me? I don't fucking think so. Like, it's not happening. And if Tom's healthy, the Bucs roster is pretty deep. It's not as deep as the Browns, but it's pretty darn deep, and they can survive some attrition. And Tom wouldn't care anyways. Like, you could have the fourth and fifth wide receivers starting for that team, and he'd be like, that's all right, I'll throw him open. Like, he doesn't care.
Aaron Dobson look passable, so yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So there's lots of examples like that. So it's... I can't bet against the Bucs if Brady's there. If Brady's not there, all bets are off, right? But it would take a miracle to beat Brady with that deep Bucs roster if he gets there again, right? Could they stumble? Yeah, they could. That's the NFL, man. But if they get there and he's still healthy, you won't find me placing a bet against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl with that team. No way.
Well, you know who's pretty good at miracles is Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs.
For sure.
Who's my pick for Super Bowl winner. I think we're going to get a rematch of these two teams. And I think your point about, you know, the Super Bowl is a one-game season. It is a season within a season within a season, because the playoffs in itself is its own beast. The Super Bowl, there's so much pressure. There's so much preparation. There's so much outside external forces that impact this one game that a lot of teams just aren't prepared for unless they've been there. And I think that's part of the reason why Tom has won so many Super Bowls. And obviously he's been to a lot of Super Bowls, but he's so used to that situation. Remember last year, he kicked his family out of the house for a couple weeks to get ready for that Super Bowl. But he knows what it takes. He knows what it takes to prepare, and that's part of the reason why they won. And I think the Kansas City Chiefs have a lot of miracle workers that know what it takes to prepare, not just to play in a Super Bowl, but to play in a Super Bowl against Tom Brady. You know, Andy Reid has gone against Tom a lot in multiple Super Bowls. Patrick Mahomes has faced Tom in championship games and a Super Bowl now. Steve Spagnuolo has played against Tom in multiple Super Bowls and beat Tom, arguably with Tom's best team, in a Super Bowl. These are guys that are used to playing against the GOAT, that knows how he thinks, how he prepares, and most importantly to me, they're not scared of him. That team is not scared of Tom Brady. They relish the opportunity to play against Tom Brady on the biggest stages. I think a lot of the reason why teams would falter against the Patriots and now falter against the Bucs is when that man has the ball, teams blink. and the Chiefs are one of the few teams that don't blink. So I think when you factor in they have a championship culture, championship mentality, championship preparation, and their personnel got better, their offensive line is exponentially better, their defense, especially their defensive line rotation, is unbelievable. And you have Patrick Mahomes, and you have Andy Reid, and you have Spags, and you have these weapons. I really do believe that the Chiefs are going to get the rematch that we know they want. They want Tom. They're going to get him, and they're going to beat him.
I hope so. I hope we get that game. And I'm going to say something because, look, I'm not a Chiefs fan. I'm not a Bucks fan. I'm a football fan. And as a football fan, I hope we get that game because that's going to be a kick-ass football game. And I hope the Chiefs are healthy. Like, I legitimately do. And honestly, this is going to sound weird. I bet Tom hopes so, too.
Right? Oh, he wants all the smoke.
He wants all the smoke. He's like, don't say that I beat Kansas City because Mahomes was limping around. Don't say that I beat Kansas City because they didn't have an offensive line. He's like, bring them to me with a healthy offensive line and a good foot. Because he doesn't, you know, talk about blinking. He doesn't blink either, right? He is the stare down champion of the NFL. And I hope, I like legitimately hope, I know some people would be bored with it, like, oh, same two teams. Fine. Mm-hmm. Go away. Yeah. Like, I want full strength Kansas City versus full strength Tampa Bay. Let's go. Like, I would take that tomorrow. Like, I don't want to skip the season. There's going to be a lot of cool storylines and a million special moments. There always are. I want full strength Kansas City versus full strength Tampa Bay for all the marbles. Like, I'd be hard pressed to come up with a matchup that's like better than that. Maybe similar, maybe cool storylines, maybe players that have never been there. Always cool. Gimme Tom Brady versus Mahomes in a rematch with health. I'll take it 10 times out of 10 right now. Like, you can't wish for better than that. It's two extremely talented teams, two very talented coaching staffs. Like, let's go. Stand out there toe to toe, swing big, and see who wins. Like, that's the best.
Goat versus baby goat. It's all we want.
Sure.
It's all we want. It's all we need. And by the way, you know that as soon as people started calling Mahomes baby goat a couple years ago when he got his first ring, he dedicated his fucking life to destroying him. He's like, oh, you think he's going to be better than me? You think he's going to build a better legacy? Let me go beat him in this AFC championship game. Let me go to the NFC and beat him in a Super Bowl. Let him come back to me the next year. Beat him again. Like, Tom wants Pat. Because he wants to bury him and secure his legacy. He's like, nah,
for sure.
That dude's different than me. Like, that's what he wants. He's that kind of psychopath. And that's why we love him. He's Tom Brady.
That's why he's incredibly successful at what he does. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't pay attention to that or sort of don't want to know that in certain ways. And it's like, you have to be the right kind of asshole, right? You do. Like, family, get out. Like, I have something to do and it's very important. I'll see you in 2 weeks. I love you all, but you need to leave. And they were probably like, okay, Dad, we're out. Like, when Dad gets that look, we leave, right? And it's not that Tom Brady hates his family. It's not that. He believes that he knows what he has to do, that this is required, and that there's one way to do it. He's proved that correct more than any other football player in history. So kind of got to listen to him, whether you're a coach, teammate, family member. Like, Tom knows what he's doing and he wants one thing. You're absolutely correct. He wants all the smoke. He wants the legacy. He wants to be, he doesn't want to be good. He doesn't want to be great. He wants to be the greatest, like, without argument. So you just, and he already is, but guys like him, and somebody just posted all of Montana's touchdowns through the playoffs. I think it was 86, you know, all 11 touchdowns that he threw through the playoffs and the Super Bowl. And, you know, the guy on the other end of a bunch of those was Jerry Rice, right? And the stat came out last week that, you know, Julio Jones would need 10 more years of 1,000-yard seasons to catch Jerry Rice. Like, Jerry Rice is inarguably the greatest receiver of all time. There is no argument to that. Like, he is up above at a level that you can't even begin to fathom. And Tom wants that, right? He actually wants to look at Jerry Rice and go, yeah, you're second. Like, clearly you're second. And it's one of the greatest football players, if not the greatest football player of all time besides Tom. Tom wants to just dust him to the point where nobody even mentions him in the same breath, which is ridiculous.
Oh, but by the way,
that's what Brady wants.
Side note, but the Athletic countdown of like greatest players of all time put Jerry Rice at 3. No. Jerry's not 3. I'm sorry.
Jim Brown might not even be
the best running back. Yeah, he's not the second best player.
No, I didn't see the ranking, so I can't get upset about it, which I think is good for my health. But Jerry Rice is ridiculous. I made the argument that he could come back tomorrow and put up 400 yards.
I mean, maybe. He's still in shape.
He's still in great shape. And you think he couldn't out-savvy a bunch of third cornerbacks, which is really who he was in the lineup against, even in his later years? He was eating those people on savvy alone, right? I bet, this sounds terrible and I would never subject him to it, but Jerry Rice goes to the Detroit Lions. He's 50.
Oh, no. Oh,
he's 50-whatever years old, right? And you tell me Jerry Rice isn't going to put up 400 yards in garbage time for the Lions? He probably is.
Probably.
And that's redonkulous. Like, that's ridiculous. But that's the, and Jerry would probably be like, yeah, I'll try. Like, I'm already in shape. I could get in a little bit of shape. And then, yeah, I'll try it. Like,
still runs that hill, by the way, every day.
This is the mindset that is different than 99.95% of all other NFL players that have ever played. And Brady has it, Rice had it. They're just those guys that are like, I don't want to be good. I don't want to be great. I'm going to be better than everybody. And I want to be so much better than everybody that you can't even make legitimate arguments without getting laughed at. So it's different.
God, I hope we get that game. I hope we get it so much. What do you say we get out of here, EJ? We've done the Tampa versus Dallas recap. I'm assuming Tampa won, but who knows? I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Time traveling. It's great.
We've done that. We talked about our division picks. We talked about our championship game picks. We talked about our Super Bowl picks. It's been a hell of an offseason. I'm super excited to kick off actual meaningful football games. And EJ, you're going to be down here in Vegas with me when that happens. So I could not be more stoked. I know that everybody listening to this, especially over an hour and 15, 20 minutes into it by now, is also super excited. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for watching on YouTube, however you're consuming Bootleg Football. And we will see you back here in a few days, I'm assuming, to talk about all the Week 1 games and all the craziness that happens and all the random bullshit that tends to happen in Week 1. So we will see you back here in a little bit. And until then, later.
Take care.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.